My name is Mike Matusi. I'm the founder of Contemporary Spirituality, and we are here today with Biagio Mazza, who has been on the locally here involved for years. He is the current pastoral associate at St. Sabina Catholic Church in Belton, Missouri. And let's just, for those of you who don't know him, let's catch up on his journey. So, Biagio, I understand that you were interested in the priesthood early and then eventually decided that was not your call, but remained interested in religion, had a minor in religion, and I think eventually got a master's degree in religious education with an emphasis on adult education and scripture. And you went to school at Fordham and grew up in New York. And is that about right so far?
Yes, yes. Except that, you know, one thing too, I was born in Italy and came to this country when I was about 10 years old. And so, and lived in New York till we moved to Kansas City. Yeah.
I didn't know you were born in Italy. That is exciting. Okay, catch us up from there. So you are in New York, and catch us up maybe from 1976. What did you do with the church? It sounds like you've really been working with the church with an emphasis on adult faith formation from the beginning, huh?
Yes, very much so. Even though I started as director of religious education, which was working primarily with kids, one of the things that really affected me very much is working with the parents. And I knew I had the gift to work with adults. And so I consistently pursued that both in my education as well as my engagement with the Archdiocese of New York. And then finally trying to find some dioceses that really had a priority on adult education, adult faith formation. And that's when I came across the Diocese of Kansas City, St. Joseph. At the time, they had what they call a Center for Pastoral Life and Ministry that I applied for and became part of their staff, and was that for almost 18 years.
Okay. What did you do there over that 18-year stretch? What type of activities did you do in that role?
It was a variety of things, but primarily, I would say, staff formation. In other words, working with parish staffs to enhance their ability to work together as groups, education. We had a ministry formation program called New Wine, in which a three-year program in which we formed ministers to be engaged in not only church work, but also community work involvement with some sort of theological background, as well as skills, you know, skills to deal with groups, to facilitate groups, and so on. So I was also part of what we call an interfaith group that engaged people in, especially with Jews and with we had an ecumenical committee that worked with Jews and with Protestants in terms of putting programs together and so on. So that was the heart of it. But I would say essentially it was formation, adult faith formation, and ministry formation, getting adults who are interested in being of service, giving them skills and giving them background so they can speak with some sort of confidence about their own tradition and to do the work that needs to be done with groups.
Okay. Let's talk about Vatican II. I know you're a big believer in Vatican II and really a big believer that it still hasn't really been implemented in the churches. Why was Vatican II so important, and how is it that it after all these years, it really still hasn't been implemented?
Yeah. I think the Vatican II was a foundational experience for the church in the 20th century. And the reason it was that is because it for the first time, anyway, the church became what I would call a world church and not a European church. And not only that, it became a church that was open to relationship with the entire human family and not just Catholics or not just Christians. So it's an it's an open-ended vision of church, a church that should be attuned to the needs of all God's people, no matter who they are, where they are, and what their religious beliefs are. We are a human family. And so that for me is the key vision of the Second Vatican Council with regards to what it means to be church. And that as a result of that, many Catholics along the way have resisted that openness because they were taught for centuries that we are the only show on the road. We are the only boat in the ocean, and everybody else is going to sink, but we're the only ones who are going to be saved. Well, Vatican II challenged that to the nth degree. And for me, that has been an inspiration of how I conduct my ministry, or how I conduct my way of dealing with Jews, Muslims, whatever it might be, other Christians, and so on. The fear, I think the reason why it hasn't really taken a hold of and hasn't really been put into practice is because people fear going out of their comfort zones. They fear reaching out and building bridges of understanding simply because they feel that their own values are going to be challenged and so on, instead of being secure in their values and being able to engage and learn from others as well, and mutual understanding and respect. So I think there's that has been the great fear. Of course, the other big thing is that it undermined the authorities of many of the people in the institutional church by saying that, you're not the only show on the road. You're not the only person with authority. All of us have a baptismal responsibility to live out our faith in the best way that we know how. So I think that's one of the key reasons why it hasn't really been implemented.
Got it. Pope Francis, your thoughts on him and how he lines up with your understanding of Vatican II?
Very much so. I think Pope Francis actually, speaks and consistently has incarnated, if you want, the vision of Vatican II with openness, movement towards challenging the institution, especially those people who think they're above and beyond the ordinary human person because of their role and authority, position, whatever it might be. So he really challenges that, and he really understands the need for us as a church to walk with people, to accompany people, to really be pastorally concerned with the needs of people, and not with our own pushing our own agendas and what it might be, but to actually, as a matter of fact, I love the image he says, we've lost the art of accompaniment, and we need to recapture that. And that accompaniment isn't just with Catholics. That accompaniment is with all of God's people, wherever they are and whatever they need. And so that's the key vision of Vatican II that Francis really kind of incarnates and pushes every time he opens his mouth. So he's one of the heroes that I think incarnates Vatican II to the nth degree.
Tell us about some of his appointments, maybe underscoring this pastoral dimension and how you see that fitting with Vatican II and potentially changing the institutional church.
Yeah, under the previous popes, they hired primarily administrative people who were centralizers. If the authority was focused exclusively on them, Pope Francis is hiring bishops and cardinals and appointing them first of all from the unknown parts of the world. You know, Haiti has never had a cardinal. And in its whole lifetime, and Pope Francis appointed one, and he said he wants voices from the peripheries of the world to really speak to and contribute to the movement of the church and where the church should be at. So I think that. But the primary thing that Pope Francis has done is appointed pastoral people who are attuned again to his vision. People who are going to walk with their people, people who are going to be attuned to their needs and not lord it over them, but actually be of service to them and respond to whatever is needed on a very real practical level with regards to where people are at and walking with them. So that's the key thing that he's pushing, and it's good to see. And I hope by those appointments it will change the entire institutional church as it goes along.
Yeah, let's go to the other side of the ledger, some of the challenges. We just went through an election cycle, and we had certain bishops who seemed to take more of a political position, you know, than a gospel position, talking about voting for a candidate solely because of his stance on pro-life, for example. Your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think that's the wrong track. Unfortunately, that seemed to be the majority of the bishops, but wrong track, because even in the documents that the bishops themselves put out, we are not one-issue voters. And yet, somehow or other, they've kept insisting that abortion was the preeminent issue, and all the other things are subservient to that. And so, as a result, it really confused Catholics and really misdirected Catholics to think that there's only one issue that we need to vote on. That's why, good old Cardinal Bernardin, even before he died, Archbishop of Chicago, consistently said that we are consistent ethics means that across the board we have to respect life, not just in the womb, but across the board from what he would call from womb to tomb. So this consistent ethic of life has to be consistent. Otherwise, we're being hypocritical, contradictory, where we can defend life in the womb, but not, the death penalty, or not people who are, once they're born, they're on their own, that kind of thing. So I think it's really unfortunate that some bishops keep insisting that there's only one issue to look at, in the guise supposedly of forming people's consciences. They claim that that's their role. Yes, it might be your role, but you help people form their conscience. You don't tell them how to vote, and you don't insist on one issue over others. That's not gospel values, and that's not what Jesus would have done anyway.
Well, sure. I mean, to me, it's no more clear than you get on Facebook, and if somebody posts something about pro-life, you'll see a bunch of people jump in. Now somebody can post something about the death penalty, and there'll be deafening silence, you know, but that's that womb to tomb argument that you've got to take the thread all the way through.
Exactly.
Tell us more about your work at St. Sabina. You've been there since 2006, adult education, faith formation. What type of programs, what type of things do you do there?
A variety of things, primarily focused on essentially educating and forming anybody who's willing to come, by the way. They're open to Catholics, non-Catholics, anybody can come. Essentially forming them in the tradition, looking at the scripture, but essentially giving them the various ways of looking at an issue. Hopefully based on gospel value and Christian values, based on the Jesus lifestyle, giving them a variety of ways to examine the issues based on those values, and not saying this is the only way you can look at this and this is the only way you can look at that, but rather here are the options. You decide what's important for you, given what you've heard, given your own experience, and so on. So for me, it's not necessarily dumping information on them, but rather being able to expose them to a variety of perspective and asking them to really think for themselves. You have a brain, you have a conscience, you have freedom. Think for yourself and be able to apply the principles in a way that makes sense to you in your own life. And I've done that with regards to scripture, the tradition. I've done that with regards to church history, theology, but also with ecumenical and interfaith education, both in Judaism and Christianity, the monotheistic Judaism, Christianity, and Islam, the monotheistic religions, and also just basic knowledge and respect for the other. I use the term always trying to build bridges of understanding and respect of one another. It doesn't necessarily mean we agree with everything, but we make the connections, and hopefully we learn and respect from one another through mutual understanding and growth in knowledge. So that's been my thrust throughout the entire time. And also I would mention that I've also consistently tried to, I didn't necessarily be critical of the church, but to certainly have people be critical of their own tradition, to say, are we being consistent with who we claim we are, or are we playing games, or are we being hypocritical? So, and that's part of the faith formation, I think, that's essential, in especially with dealing with adults, again, who have a brain, who have freedom, who have a conscience that they can exercise.
To that point, you work for the institution, so to speak, yet from time to time, I think you said you may disagree or be critical of the institution, or at least the actions of certain members. How do you maintain that balance between still having your core principles or core values with that tradition, but still pushing back when necessary?
At times I maintain that balance better than other times, but it's always a challenge. It's always a challenge to maintain that balance, because there are times where I'm very much frustrated with what the institutional church is doing, and yet there are times when I see a lot of good that the institutional church has done and can do in terms of service to God's people. So that, for me, is a constant balance that I have to pay. It's almost like a dynamic tension that I consistently struggle with, because I see a great value in especially the communal dimension of the church and the concern for justice issues and the poor. But at times, I don't see the leadership and the institutional church following through on that, and that creates all sorts of tension at times. And there are times that I've been criticized, or I've been censured, not allowed to speak at certain places, simply because they know that I would be challenging some of the ways that things are being done, or some of the policies that are in place. But at the same time, I could still feel that by being part of the institution, I can still value it and yet be critical of it at the same time, and enjoin people to start thinking the same way, based again on the core values that we claim we profess, namely gospel values and the Jesus lifestyle.
Yeah, very good. Couple points for follow-up. I think the social justice issues are intriguing, and the biblical bias towards the poor. You know, we spend, it seems to me, a lot of times at the parish level taking care of our own tribe, but does it always really get to those outside the tribe and the poor and the outcast and so forth? And is it some of the tension that you're talking about?
Yeah, oh, very much so, very much so. I mean, we claim to be a justice-oriented people, and especially the concern for, as a matter of fact, way back in 1971, the bishops claimed we have a preferential option for the poor. Well, that's all very well and good, and I think we do a lot of work with that, but we really oftentimes don't pay attention to the poverty that exists on all sorts of levels, you know, in terms of spirituality, in terms of real justice, in terms of justice within the church itself. You know, it speaks very well, for example, on economic issues that we have to be fair, we have to pay a fair wage and so on. And yet the institution itself, for the most part, doesn't follow through on those principles. And so that's a constant tension, again, for me, in terms of saying, wait a second, you're saying this, but you're doing this, and that doesn't square That doesn't jive at all. So how do we go about making this better and really being consistent in what we're claiming? The biblical tradition speaks very much to the need to be attuned to the people and to be attuned especially to the people who are dispossessed, the stranger, the outcast, and so on, the poor. And so if we don't do that, then we're failing in our role as an institution commits itself to the gospel values.
Yes. I mean, I'm just looking at our own history. You know, I mean, what we've done to people of color, what we've done to indigenous people, and we don't even tell the truth in our history books. You know, it's just trail of tears. Not many people know about systemic racism. Really, not many people know about but we preach the gospel. We say so. I understand what you're saying. Let me ask you another question, just something that just occurred to me would be very challenging. So you were working with a lot of Catholics, I'm sure at the parish level, but you're dialoguing, interfaith dialogue and so forth. But at the Catholic level, so many of us were raised with Vatican I principles. Clergy at the top, clergy tells you what to do, Baltimore Catechism, it's just all black and white, and here are the rules, and here what you do, here's what you do, and here's what you don't do. How do you move people, you know, raised in that background, to your own spiritual journey is up to you, you know, to some extent, and you've got to be accountable, and you got to take responsibility for it. How do you do that, or how do you teach that?
Yeah. And this, for me, again, goes back to my understanding of Vatican II, I've done a lot of work with Vatican II. That's exactly what Vatican II says. So I start off with the basis that Vatican II is official Catholic teaching, and this is what it calls us to. It calls us, for each of us, to take responsibility for our relationship with God and to decide for ourselves what is the best path for that. Not to rely on the institutional church to tell us what to do, but rather to take our own ownership of our own faith and really direct it in a way that makes meaningful sense to us and not to what someone else dictates for us. And so I consistently push that whole thing that you have to decide. It's up to you to make to understand what your path to God is. No one else can tell you that. And Vatican II says very clearly and explicitly that you have to decide, you have a conscience, you have a right to choose your path to God, and no one can interfere with that. Vatican II very clearly says your conscience is your sanctuary between you and God, and no one can interfere with that. And if they do, they're violating a key principle of what it means to be a human being. Those are some of the things that I push consistently. And as I say, unfortunately, it's some of the things that the institutional church has not done and has not followed through on any sort of consistent level. As a matter of fact, in many ways, it has fought against those very principles. And I think it confuses a lot of Catholics as a result. But more and more Catholics are coming, and more Christians across the board, but certainly Catholics are coming to the notion that they are the ones who determine their path to God, not the priests or the clergy or whatever. So,
yeah, very good. How can you have a? Do you have a newsletter or an email list, or you know, I know I've run into you from time to time for years. How do people follow more of what you're doing?
Essentially, I have an email list. All right. That anybody can get on, and anybody can choose to get off too. By the way, because some people say that I don't allow that. That's idiotic. But anyway, so I have an email list that you can. And usually, when I do any sort of offering of any kind, I send out a pretty wide email contact, and I do it primarily through email. I also do writing every week in our bulletin, our parish bulletin. I do a scripture reflection every week in our parish bulletin. And also every week, I also do what I call, I've developed this since February of 2016, a weekly short video, 5 to 7 minutes, on a particular topic. I've done a whole series on Judaism and Christianity. I've done a whole series on Islam. I've done liturgical stuff. Why do we do certain things this way? So that's been a consistent thing, and it's available through YouTube and on our website as well. It's now going on four years, almost 5 years now of this material that's available. So that's how I get the word out. I don't have a website, but I do primarily things through email and through some of the website through St. Sabina's at this particular point.
Okay, and if someone wanted to jump on your website and take a look at your offerings, how would they do that?
Well, you could go to stsabina.org. stsabinaparish.org. All one word, stsabinaparish.org. And they could go to a thing called Do You Know series is on there. A little link on the left-hand side of the web page. And also, there's a menu called Adult Formation or Adult Faith Formation, where they would see the offerings that I have and some handouts and so on. But probably the best way would be to send me an email, and I would put them in touch with a variety of things. My email would be Biagio, my first name, at stsabinaparish.org. So.
All right. Outstanding. Well, very good. Anything else that, boy, you've been doing the work for years and years and years. I think you see your master's degree in religious education goes all the way back to when?
Yeah, I graduated from Fordham in 1979. Continued working through Marino School of Theology in Marino, New York, there, and took scripture and theology courses for the next 8 years. Yeah, till I moved. We moved to Kansas City in 1988. So I have like 32 or 36 credits beyond my master's in scripture and theology. Beyond that, plus my own education along the way. So that's been my background with regards to my own education.
Outstanding. All right. Well, thank you so much. We're lucky to have you in Kansas City, and thank you for the work that you're doing, which is consistent and progressive, and underscoring just important stuff. Right. Your spiritual journey is yours, and you've got to figure it out, and you got to find it. I think that's one of the things they're saying loud and clear.
Right, very much so. Yeah.
Very good. Any last words?
Any last words
you want to leave people with?
Yeah. Well, thanks for the opportunity to be able to express this. I do think I do think that the value of being a member of an institution is the possibility of what an institution is capable of. The communal dimension of it, the concern for justice and the poor. And so for me, I consistently am still there trying to do the best that I can, but at the very same time to, allow adults to empower themselves to really be the kinds of people that determine their own path to God and their own way of working out their spiritual lives. So,
all right.
So thank you for the opportunity.
Hey, pleasure. Good hooking up with you again, and thank you for your time.
Sure. Thank you, Mike.